Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
I remember the red herring story that in order to get the dog off a trail, you get a red herring, a fish of some sort, and you put it in front of the dog who's sniffing so that they can get off the right trail and get on the wrong trail. That's the red herring. And there's a lot of red herrings, boy. Woo! The moment you get over the target, this is when people start throwing out all kinds of red herrings, trying to get you off the target, trying to get you to talk about things that will make you look stupid, that don't make any sense whatsoever. And so, anyway, Jordan, jump in here. Can you think of any red herrings that people throw out in front of you when you start talking about China and start talking about, I'm looking at one of your tweets right now about North Korea. I woke up to the news on North Korea that they are, you know, they're positioning themselves to rise back up again. What are some of the red herrings you have ran into when you start talking about the threat of China?
Well, a lot of people, and, you know, this is Tom Friedman, the New York Times columnist, who makes these trips to China, and he talks to Chinese officials who just sort of, you know, they compliment him, tell him how great he is. And then he comes back and says, you know, we can work with these guys. The problem is, yes, a lot of Chinese technocrats know what their country should do. But the problem is it's run by a guy named Xi Jinping, who is a deeply committed Maoist and who is taking China in all the wrong directions. So that is a red herring because it diverts us to what we should really be thinking about. And that is what Xi Jinping plans for the United States. It's hard for us to do that, but we got to remember one thing, Kathy. You got a Communist Party that is behind the fentanyl gangs, and that kills 70,000 to 75,000 Americans each year. And those guys, they're not criminals like we think criminals. These are people who have the full backing of the Communist Party.
Yeah.
And that means we should think of fentanyl deaths in our country as murders, not just overdoses.
Right. Yeah, you know, I mean, like, that was something Vivek would talk about all the time, is that these fentanyl overdoses are not overdoses. These people are being poisoned, and they're being poisoned as a direct result. Our southern border has been weaponized, but the ones who are bringing these drugs in, this fentanyl in, to poison Americans is the Communist Party of China. They are backing and funding these people who are doing what they're doing. And 75,000, like at one point it was 100,000 deaths a year. And now you're saying, and now fentanyl deaths are one of the largest causes of death in our country.
Yes. Well, 100,000 figure is overdose deaths.
Overdose deaths, yes. Mm-hmm.
So if you have to sort of shrink that a little bit because there are other things like cocaine and whatever.
But 75,000, let's say, ish of the 100,000 is as a result of fentanyl. And fentanyl is a weapon that is being used by the Communist Party of China.
Yes. The fentanyl gangs in China, they are large. They're well organized. They could not operate in China's near total surveillance state without the knowledge and therefore the approval of the party. But we know that some of these fentanyl producers are actually state owned. There are central government subsidies for fentanyl production. Chinese diplomats give cover to the gangs. Every container that leaves China is inspected by Chinese officials. The Chinese fentanyl gangs, they launder their proceeds through the Chinese state banking system. And China's TikTok, which the government uses to propagate its narratives, promotes illegal drug use in the United States.
But now, did you see where Donald Trump is now pro-TikTok?
Yes, and that's wrong. Because we know TikTok does two things. First of all, it steals American data, and it's violated every pledge it's made to the American people about data. But the more important is China uses TikTok to propagate Communist Party narratives. And Trump should remember that in 2020, he lost the election in large part because the Chinese regime was supporting a guy named Joe Biden. So, yeah, we don't know what Trump ultimately plans for TikTok. But that's not the way to negotiate. to China to make preemptive concessions, which is what Trump just did by going to the Supreme Court and asking them to give a lease of additional lease of life to TikTok.
What you cannot jump into the mind of Donald Trump and understand why he does what he does. But as someone on the outside who spent a lot of time thinking about these kinds of things, what would be the motivations of Donald Trump? Because I remember in 2020, even with TikTok using its influence in American culture to actually put up instructions on how to start a riot. I remember that, right? I mean, everybody was talking about that. And I remember for so long that the Republican Party specifically was like, let's put a spotlight on TikTok and who's really controlling TikTok and how they're manipulating elections and American people and all of this stuff. Now we get a ban in place and Donald Trump comes out and say, oh, no, let's rethink that. What would be the motivations of Donald Trump doing such a thing?
Well, as you say, I'm not in his mind. He does know that TikTok helped him get reelected, but on balance, probably it helped Biden more because the Communist Party did not want to see Trump get elected. You know, it could be a very simple thing. You know, it could be Elon Musk, who has some pro-China views. It could very well be a lobbyist who's gotten to Trump. I don't know, Kathy, but I do know that the decision was wrong because from any number of different perspectives, TikTok is a weapon the Communist Party uses, and it's pointed at the heart of the United States. Now, if you wanted to use it as a negotiating tool, you let TikTok die, because that puts a time frame for the Communist Party. That gives them a sense of urgency.
Mm-hmm.
So asking for an additional lease of life for TikTok is exactly the wrong way to go. Do not make preemptive concessions to China. China does not return the favor. They just press the advantage. And they think that a person who makes preemptive concessions is weak. And that's probably what they're thinking about Trump right now. And that's not good for the United States.
Now, you've been on Twitter talking a whole lot about Elon Musk and his relationship with Xi Jinping and his influence over what's going on in Taiwan right now. I don't know if you're afraid of being, you know, kicked off your platform or not. That seems to be something Elon is doing if you criticize him. But one of your tweets, if you can explain it, everything the world's richest man says about Taiwan is wrong. So here's a little history lesson for Elon Musk. And then you put out a link to your article that you wrote it on. Wrote about this. What is Elon saying? How is it wrong?
Yeah, he is on a number of occasions this year. He has said, Taiwan is part of China, like Hawaii is part of the United States. He says you don't have to read between the lines. You have to read the lines of what China is saying. And so he is saying Taiwan is an integral part of China. If you look at history, though, the People's Republic of China has never ruled Taiwan. Even greater than that, no Chinese regime has ever held indisputable sovereignty to the island of Taiwan. And I go through the history going back to the Ming Dynasty, which is the 1600s, to show that no Chinese regime has ruled Taiwan and that the Communist Party's narrative on Taiwan on history is absolutely wrong. And, you know, we can have disagreements about whether the U.S. should defend Taiwan or not, but we should get our history right. And so this piece that I wrote in the Gatestone Institute is to show the history of China, Taiwan, and the world.
I will absolutely be going out there and reading that. You know what was really interesting? Over the weekend, I saw an article about Elon Musk is getting behind the right, what they call, quote unquote, right wing party in Germany. And the Germans are going into a fit over that. It's a big brouhaha. And then I'm looking at what you're talking about, you know, with Taiwan and China, and it just hit me. I mean, it's hit me for some time now, but I'm kind of connecting all these dots. The most powerful country in Europe is Germany. The most powerful country in Asia is China. The most powerful country in the world is America. And at the and in the ear of all of these world leaders who run China, who runs Germany, who runs America is Elon Musk. He's the common thread. He's the common, like, that's a lot of power and influence. What does history say about that? Should we be concerned, or is this just a nothing burger?
Well, I think we have to be concerned. Now, Elon Musk has done some really great things, and I start and put SpaceX at the top of that. If the United States is going to get to the moon before China, it's not going to be because of NASA. It's going to be because of Elon Musk.
Yes.
And that's a really important thing. And Musk has opened up Twitter, which is good, because before it was a little bit of a totalitarian space run by the woke crowd. So Elon Musk did that, and that's very important, too. And I think President Trump was the right choice in our election, and Elon Musk put a lot of money, put a lot of narrative behind Trump, and that was fantastic. I think the other thing that Musk is doing, which is great, is, of course, DOGE, to try to shrink the federal budget and especially the federal deficit. But the problem is, in a democracy, you want power to be distributed because you don't want someone to become too powerful. And for the reasons that you just pointed out, yeah, there's the concentration of power in the hands of Elon Musk is a little bit of a worry.
And you're right. I mean, I'm grateful for Elon Musk and the role that he played in getting Donald Trump elected. I believe his role was not a small role. I think he played a very significant role in helping Donald Trump win, which is a good thing. I'm all for that. I can't imagine a world Kamala is in charge of. And yes, I'm so very grateful for DOGE and their mission statement. And certainly with my good friend, Vivek Ramaswamy, I adore him. I think he's a great guy. And I can appreciate SpaceX. I can appreciate a lot of things. But when I start connecting the dots, I think about what we used to say all the time, where absolute power corrupts absolutely. And should we be concerned at all?
Yes, definitely, because that's the way, you know, democracies are supposed to work. We're supposed to have everyone talk. We're supposed to have, you know, the free and open discussion of the First Amendment. And we don't give any one political figure complete power. The founding fathers had developed a system of checks and balances, which was genius, especially when you consider that they were the first to do it in the world. And so really what we're talking about is a system which depends upon diversity. And so the spreading out of power and the concentration of power has always been a problem.
And diversity of thought, right? It's a system that requires diversity of thought among all things.
That's what I meant. I didn't mean diversity in the DEI sense.
I know.
Meant diversity. Yeah. So thank you for that.
Yeah, but what's interesting is that, you know, with this whole H-1B kerfuffle, the first thing he did after he wasn't getting his way was he shut down diversity of opinions and started demonetizing and shutting people's accounts. And he has his reasons for that. And I'm not going to litigate whether good or bad. I clearly have an opinion about it. But again, it's just when you take into consideration who this man is and the amount of power that is concentrated in his hand, and you see what he's, you know, what he was capable of doing and shifting the whole conversation and just dragging people and wasn't very thoughtful about his responses. I don't know. It gave me pause.
It certainly does. And people are concerned. But, you know, the one thing, Kathy, is that, you know, with Musk going overboard on H-1B visas in terms of his rhetoric, I mean, the substantive issues, we'll put those to aside for a moment. But you're right to focus on his going overboard on the way he's handled it. The problem for him is that people are now starting to talk about it, and that reduces his influence. So our system is working because Kathy is on the radio talking about this. Other people are going to think about it, and we're going to have further conversations because you have decided that this is something that is important to discuss. So our system will work.
I think so. One last thing before I let you go. You put a tweet out here, praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. This is going to be one hell of a fight with hail. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the forces of evil. And let's mention that word because it's important. There are evil forces that are attacking our country, both internally and externally. And they do not want us to get up off the mat. So we're going to have to fight. People of faith, people who are good, people who believe in democracy and freedom, we're going to have to protect our society. And it's going to be a hard, long struggle because in our country right now, there are many forces that are working against the American Republic. And it's not just in the United States, it's around the world. So, Kathy, you know, you're out there screaming and yelling, and I love that because we're doing that. We're going to win this hell of a fight.
Praise the Lord. I am hopeful.
That's the ammunition.
I know, right? I am, you know, someone asked me from Australia, why are you people in America so obsessed with your guns? I'm like, so we don't end up like Australia. So we don't.
Or China.
Or China or any other totalitarian regime that or Germany where, you know, London, you know, where people do not have the ability to protect themselves. I tell people all the time, I practice my Second Amendment on a daily basis, which reminds me, I was just talking to my friend. I was looking at the news where New York City. New Year extravaganza that they have every year, they are increasing security. And my first thought was, who in their right mind would go to New York for the New York New Year's Eve event? Who in their right mind would do that? Are y'all not watching the news? But anyway, they're going to have a lot of security there.
They will, but I won't be there.
I will not be there either. I started taking neurology classes from Harvard last year, working with these presidential campaigns. I mean, woo, the people you come across. I felt like I needed to understand how the mind works. And, you know, so I've been doing a lot of reading, a lot of kind of double clicking on a number of topics. And, you know, and I found it interesting once when someone said, when this psychiatrist was talking, and he said, you know, when someone presents depression to me, the first thing I try to do is to find out, is it chemical or is it because of life choices? And sometimes I just started double clicking, right? Because their depression is very real. But sometimes it's not always chemical or neurological. Sometimes it's the ruminating on past decisions or missed opportunities, things such as that. So as we walk into 2025, I think it's a wonderful exercise for you to begin to ask yourself or to answer the question, why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing with the time I have remaining? And I don't know if you're very mature in life or not so mature in life, wherever you fall on the spectrum. I think that is a very valid question that we should be answering. And if you don't have the answer, it's okay. Look for the answer. Start thinking, start doing, figuring those things out. That's what I'm going to be spending my time on throughout 2025. That's my goal, is to be able to answer that question with complete clarity and to help my children be able to answer that question as well so that they're not just floating around like random atoms, but that they know who they are, why they're here, so they can get busy about living the life we have in front of us. You only get one. I know Some other religions may say you get to do this life again. I don't believe that. I believe this is your one take. And you are here for a reason. What are you made for? Yada, yada. I know. I'm just going on and on. Because, I mean, this is on the forefront of my mind. It's something that I think about all the time. Why am I here? And am I living? Am I utilizing all that I've been given, all that I know, to live the best life I possibly can? And I meet a lot of people who are just existing. And I just want to come alongside you, give you a big bear hug, and say, as we walk into 2025, you are made for a purpose. I hope you will spend all of the rest of 2024, which is just one more day, but all of 2025, making sure that you can answer that question. Who are you listening to? Kathy Barnett. I am sitting in for my girlfriend, Don Stensland, on the Don Stensland Show. Here's the call-in number, 855-839-1210, 855-839-1210. I just told you guys a couple of different news alerts that have come across. Donald Trump, President-elect Donald Trump, has endorsed Mike Johnson to continue on as Speaker of the House. As you know, that a vote is coming up on the 3rd, on January 3rd, which is this Friday. Tomorrow, I am going to have in the House, probably on phone, not in studio, but on the phone, I'm going to have Senator-elect Dave McCormick, as well as Congressman Scott Perry. And we're going to be talking about this particular vote that Congressman Scott Perry is going to take, as well as what's on the agenda or on the mind of our new Pennsylvania Senator-elect, Dave McCormick. I'm very excited for those conversations. That will be tomorrow, so make sure you tune in. So in addition to Donald Trump coming out saying that that Mike Johnson has his full and undivided endorsement for this vote that is going to come up on Friday, Costco is defending DEI programs as other major retailers are dropping DEI as fast as they picked it up. Costco is having a vote. Their shareholders are having a vote right now today, and they are asking their shareholders to vote against a proposal to drop DEI. What is DEI? Diversity, equity, and inclusion. I stopped calling it DEI and I started calling it DIE, die, because it is where every good idea goes to die. The moment a corporation, a school, a universe, whatever, picks up DEI, diversity of thought exits the building. And now it all becomes about these little widgets and holes. And are you plugging in the right widget in the right hole versus diversity of thought, diversity of thought, diversity of thought? That is what we want. And yes, I do believe diversity of thought should come in external packages that extend beyond blonde, blue hair women. Or men. I believe it should have the outside casing of diversity of thought. I think we can expect for it to have some different hues to it, right? Because diversity of thought, a thought is in your mind, a mind is in your brain is in your body. The body has different shades. So you can't just say, oh, no, we don't want to think about that. No, this is what people think about, whether people say it out loud or not. This is what people who are not white majority in the Republican Party think about. We think, I mean, yes, diversity of thought, I've already said it 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, The second thought comes, I mean, yeah, diversity of thought should look more, I mean, diversity of thought should not be so monotonous in its appearance. It should have some variety. And I think that that, too, is a good thing. But I think diversity, inclusion, and equity, DEI, has proven to be horrible, just like affirmative action. I believe, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe the thought of affirmative action when they were thinking about it, right, with the Civil Rights Bill in 1964, I'm sure, let's assume there were good intentions. The problem with good intentions is that you put it into the hands of flawed people. And now it becomes about numbers and widgets and nuts and bolts. And you lose the intent to bring all groups of people from different backgrounds into a room, into a corporation, into a college. Because you think if I get different backgrounds and different socioeconomics and people who look different, then we're going to get some differences in thinking. That's the general thought. That's not the case, however. What we have found these past 4 years with DEI is that it has, and I used to say this all the time, CRT, DEI, it is going to make America racist again. I believe prior to 2016, for example, or prior to Obama getting in office, I believe he really stoked the flames of racism in reviving racism in this country. I grew up on a pig farm. I grew up very impoverished. I grew up underneath a rock. I had nothing except for the lived experience that in America, if I could keep my nose clean, if I could work really, really hard and plan out my life, go get a higher education, that I may be able to create a different life for myself. And that's exactly what I did. I waited to have children. I waited to get married before I had children. I went on and got an education, have several degrees, went into the military, an adjunct professor, worked in corporate America, A.G. Edwards, Bank of America, Capital Asset Management, author of my first book, ran a very competitive. That's what I did. I didn't have an uncle that I could call and say, hey, could you open up? I didn't have anyone to invest money in me. But what I had was the belief that the color of my skin does not limit me in my own eyes. Now, to other people, I can't control what other people may think about me. But in my own eyes, I did not have to show up as a victim. That in this country, there were some basic rules and parameters. And if I could figure out what that combination was and put it and engage it in a meaningful way in my life, that I could create a life for myself. And that is what I did. And I believe for the most part, I mean, yes, did I meet some jerks along the way? Did I meet people who, you know, preferred if I had not been in the room? I remember being at Bank of America Capital Asset Management on the buy side of a very large mutual fund, Bank of America Capital Asset Management on the buy side. And I was the first Black person to ever work in that department as a financial analyst. And my thought was, I'm not old enough to be the first person doing anything. Why am I the first person? So I remember walking into these different environments, and my thinking was, the door has been open. Someone has opened the door. I'm going to walk through that door, and I'm going to be the best version of myself that I can possibly be, right? And some people will like me. Some people will not like me. I'm going to have to be okay with that, and I am. But I never thought of myself as, you know, I'm a victim. I need someone to make some special rules other than the ones that have already been laid that allows a Black person not to have to get up and go to the back of the bus, not to have to, you know, be bred as a business strategy. Our country has come so far. We've done so much. We're the least racist country in the world. You go across the world. We're the least, and I've traveled the world in the military and on my own dime. And I would come back to America. I remember going to South Korea and then coming back home as a young girl. And I kissed the ground when I got when I was like, thank you, Jesus. I'm back in America. The world is just very different. And if you haven't been outside of the United States, you may think that what we experience is how the world really is. And that's just not the case. You come back home to America and you realize, like, oh, my God, we are not perfect as a country, but we are. No one is running a close second to America. Hey, guys, Laura Loomer is on the line. Hey, Laura, how you doing?
Hey, doing well. How are you, Kathy?
I am doing well. I don't know how much of my rant you heard, but I was just talking to the audience about Costco is encouraging their shareholders to vote against getting rid of DEI. And I'm just talking, you know, DEI sucks. And it hasn't really done a whole lot of good. But I wanted you to come on because, in all fairness, Laura, on Christmas Eve, all hell broke out. And in large part, whether someone thinks it was a good discussion or not a good discussion and everything that has come out of it, the reality is no one would be talking about H-1Bs and the immigration and removing caps if it wasn't for you. You were the one who threw a rock in the crowd and got everyone to look up and say, what's going on? What is the motivation of different people? Maybe we should consider the motivations of different groups of people. It was you who started that, for better or for worse. You have also bared the largest brunt of all of this. And I just wanted to give you an opportunity to come and talk to us about why you thought it was so important to talk about what was going on with H-1Bs and other visas. And how are you doing?
Well, I appreciate you having me on, and thanks so much. Yeah, it was a pretty crazy holiday. I wasn't expecting to spend Christmas and Hanukkah arguing with the richest man in the world and all the technocrats that are trying to infiltrate the White House. But look, we needed to have this conversation, and the reality is that, you know, Elon Musk needs to have his influence checked. And we can't allow for tech billionaires and people like Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy and others who have this sense of superiority over the rest of us peasants in society and the rest of us, you know, everyday folk who really just aren't the so-called best and brightest, because I don't know if you've learned, Kathy, but 80% of the best and brightest people in the world live in India. The rest of us are just, you know, we're just a bunch of low IQ peasants, I suppose. You know, we elected Donald Trump to be our president, and I find it to be rather uncomfortable that we have these very wealthy individuals who have control over our flow of information through social media companies, people who have now been appointed by President Trump, and they are promoting policies and trying to reform our immigration policy in direct opposition to original MAGA America First policies. And I don't care, like, which reporters want to pretend and say, like, President Trump now all of a sudden supports H-1B. Promises made are promises kept. And in 2016, when we began this MAGA movement, the amazing MAGA movement that got President Trump elected, three times now, okay? We had a stolen election, but it's now gotten him elected three times. We the people supported President Trump because he said that we were going to have mass deportations, we were going to build a wall, and he was going to shut down the H-1B visa program, which was heavily abused. And now you have people that are coming in and writing these very large checks, okay? And they are trying to buy off political influence so that they can try to have a bigger seat at the table and completely erode American democracy, our constitutional republic, our political system, and the way our voices are supposed to be heard, because they think that they are the kings of society now, the tech elite who want to rule over us, turn all of us into indentured servitudes who have to work 80 hours a week with no work-life balance so that the tech billionaires can have complete control and get their cheap labor, and it's going to be at the expense of the American people, and we're going to basically turn into another India. And you've seen these tech elites this weekend talking about how they want to increase our migration to 5 million more migrants per year for 20 years, 100 million migrants over the next 20 years until we have a population of 1 billion people. I'm not making this up. These are statements that have been made by people who are now in Trump administration officials. And it should be very concerning to people. We voted for President Trump. And if I had to be the one to say it, because everybody wants to kiss Elon's ass and everybody's too afraid to challenge the richest man in the world, then so be it. I'm going to be the one to say, I don't like the fact that a billionaire is trying to overshadow President Trump and control our policy. I didn't vote for this.
Now, do you believe that there is a deficiency in the education of our children? What our children are being,
absolutely. There's a deficiency. There's not a deficiency in the American mind like Vivek was trying to say. You know, I mean, look, I understand, and I don't have anything against Indian people. I don't have anything against Vivek Ramaswamy. In fact, you know, until Vivek made these comments, I had said, you know, Vivek could potentially be a future U.S. president after President Trump. But, you know, Indian culture is supremacist in nature. And so perhaps this is why Vivek Ramaswamy, as an Indian American, has these views. Indian culture is very supremacist. They have a caste system. That's how society operates in India. So, you know, maybe he thinks that it's okay to talk down to Americans the way he's talking down to us, and make it sound like our society needs to be ruled by, the most high IQ individuals or this cultural technocratic elite. But that's not how American society works, you know? And so if people want to come to our country and they say that they want to live here for opportunity, they need to be willing to assimilate. And assimilation doesn't just mean learning the culture and coming here legally, but it also means adapting to our culture instead of trying to push your own supremacist culture onto our culture.
Well, two things. I will get to Vivek in a moment, but let me just go to another point that you just made. You said that that's not how our country works, that we don't allow high IQ technocrats to run the nation. And so how should it work? Don't we want the smartest people to lead our country?
We want the smartest people to lead our country, but we don't want the smartest people in our country to also be the richest people in the world, to get government contracts and subsidies so that they can be billionaire welfare queens and then have access to the Defense Department and a security clearance and access to all the social media networks so that if there's any type of, you know, dissent, they can just shut us down or, hypothetically speaking, in the future, even utilize their defense contracts against the people that are standing in their way. I mean, maybe it sounds far-fetched, but it's actually not far-fetched. And the founding fathers, advocated for a separation of powers. And I fear that the technocrats are trying to really undermine, infiltrate, and completely reform and eliminate our structure of government and our way of doing politics here in America, so that they really can rule like monarchs, so that they really can have this feudalist type society where we are indentured servants and peasants, and we just have to respond to the orders and the commands and the wishes of a feudalist monarchist state.
Now, of course, Elon did not say that, neither did Vivek. So why do you believe that?
Because this is the ideology that they subscribe to. So I just got off of War Room and Steve Bannon's show, and I was talking about how a lot of these guys in tech, and it's well known, they subscribe to the philosophy called Dark Enlightenment. And Dark Enlightenment is an anti-democratic movement that wants to install a technocratic monarchy in America. So this is well known. One of the main minds behind this, or two of the main guys, is a guy named Curtis Yarvin, another guy by the name of Nick Land. Curtis Yarvin receives a lot of his funding from Peter Thiel. And of course, we know that Peter Thiel is the guy who financed J.D. Vance's Senate campaign and had a lot of influence during the first administration. And so these guys have these very warped ideas, and they have unlimited amounts of money, and now they're getting appointed to positions in the Trump administration, and I find it to be concerning because already President Trump hasn't President Trump hasn't even been inaugurated yet, and we're already seeing complete disrespect of the MAGA base. They called us retards.
I'm going to have to take a break in a moment, but I want to get into this with you just a little bit. How do we breed a culture in America that puts an emphasis on education, on STEM, on those things? Because I don't believe that they're wrong in the fact that there is a deficit. I don't believe the answer is to go across the world to bring in other people. But in the short term, what are your thoughts on correcting this? Because there is a deficit, there is a need. How do we change that? Long term, obviously, get rid of DEI, CRT, all of this foolishness, put an emphasis on STEM. But in the short term, what do you think these corporations should do?
Well, they should be investing their money into training, and maybe we need to establish more schools, right? Maybe we need to establish more technical schools in America or increase our curriculum starting from, K through 12. So it's not a big surprise that America has a deficiency when it comes to math and science and STEM in our educational system. But the solution is to not replace Americans and deprive Americans of opportunities because of a stain on our educational system. Something that the tech elites also really need to take responsibility for, because these are the people that funded for decades.
I have 1 minute. I'm going to give it to you, Laura.
Well, I appreciate it. And yeah, I've been fighting this for a long time. So I've seen the type of devastation and the type of consequences that happen to the life of the ordinary American. It's something that I've lived as my own experience. When the technocrats have this, kind of unrelenting, unchecked power. And so we need to be very critical and skeptical of people. And we can be grateful. Okay, I'll say we can be grateful that Elon Musk wrote a check for $200 million. And, he did help get Twitter back so that people could have their voices in an election year. But what was the ultimate intention? Okay, what was the ultimate intention? And so we need to protect President Trump. Everybody has their own agenda.
Thank you so much. And guys, I'll be back tomorrow with a whole host of people. Blessings.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.